This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. Want to let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive. And everyone knows by now they're at 2006 North Main Street in Shevaville, Tennessee. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, take about a 15-20 minute ride down 231 South. It'll be on the left just before you get into Shevaville. And if you want to let them know that you're coming before you leave, call 1-800-264-6800 or put it up on the internet, pirtlehowerton.com. And go in and talk to the people first. Enjoy some of the relationships that you can build there. And then go outside and look what they've got out on the lot. And I guarantee you, if you spend some time out there, you're going to find exactly what you're looking for. And have a real good friend of mine, Colonel Mike Walker, is on today. And I can't call him Colonel Mike Walker anymore. He was with the Highway Patrol for many, many years. Had a number of really great working relationships with him, but he's decided to become a full-fledged Rutherford Countyan because he is now the chief of Luverne Police Department, and I was so tickled to hear that when I heard that they had named you chief, because I have known you for so many years and know how professional you are, how bright you are, and Luverne is very fortunate to have a man like you there.
Thank you, Truman. I'll give you that $20 I owe you for saying that about me.
Oh, you owe me a whole lot more than that, big boy.
After the show is over. But now, don't forget, I've been a resident of Rutherford County for over 8 years now.
You have. And it's you know, people don't realize how great it is when you're in one profession that just is almost everywhere that you go. What a great feeling it is to know that you have that brotherhood or that relationship with all the other agencies. And I think one thing that you can attest to in Rutherford County, and that's where I have most of my knowledge, the relationship between all the agencies has always been like a strong bond, and you're always there to help each one no matter what the crisis is, and nobody really cares what the credit is. You just want to make sure that that service is taken care of.
You're exactly right, and that is one of the things that that I realized about Rutherford County. I've been involved with every agency here at some point in time in more than one thing, whether it's been doing a memorial service or doing Shop with a Cop at Christmas time or taking food to families at Thanksgiving. I've been involved in that, and it is like a brotherhood or a family, I guess, and not just brothers but sisters too. But you know, I was the only child my mom and dad had, as far as daddy knows anyway.
That's why you're so spoiled, right?
Well, that's why I'm spoiled, because my mama spoiled me. But I remember when I was a teenager, somebody asked my dad, said, "Well, is this the only one you have?" He said, "Well, as far as I know, I was in the Navy in the South Pacific during World War II. And at that time, mama shot him one of those evil looks, you know, that just burned right through him. And he just kind of laughed and didn't say that anymore. But I didn't have the pleasure of you're smart on his part. But I didn't have brothers and sisters. And I can't relate to some of those family relationships, but I learned from my wife a few years ago that she could say whatever she wanted to about her sister, but I couldn't.
You know, that seems to be pretty much a dominant theme in all families. And you did not come from Rutherford County originally. You were born in Tennessee, but you were born in a small community. And I find it interesting that as long as I've known you, I didn't know that you grew up in a funeral home setting.
I did. I grew up in the small town of Dunlap. Dunlap did not have, 58 years ago next week, Dunlap did not have a hospital. Mm-hmm. And I was born in the old Bledsoe Memorial Hospital, or Bledsoe General. in Pikeville, Tennessee. And then when I was about 4 or 5 days old, I was taken home to Dunlap and grew mm-hmm. up in Dunlap. And actually in the funeral home, it was Putnam Standifer mm-hmm. funeral home at that time. And my mother's side of the family was the Standifer part.
Mm-hmm.
Her granddaddy and my granddaddy, her dad, started the old Standifer funeral home in 1902.
And I've heard of that funeral home.
And I grew up there in the funeral home itself. We actually lived there.
Now, did you actually take part in any of the business that was going on, any of the functions at the funeral home?
I did.
Because that's always been a fascination to me is how a young child can grow up in that type of setting. I always go back to that movie, My Girl, because I can see people being affected by that.
Exactly. I think the biggest effect on me was the fact that I'm very compassionate toward people.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I learned. You didn't care what socioeconomic status or what a last name was or anything else. When those folks were hurting during that time, that's one of the things my daddy told me when I asked him, why did you do this? And he said, because you help people at some of the most worst times in their lives, and mm-hmm. that's a loss of a family member. And he mm-hmm. said, that's the good part of it, is you're able to help someone during those periods. And that's the way he always approached it and looked at it. And I learned that compassion not only from him but from my mom, too. She had grown up in it as mm-hmm. well. But we actually lived in the funeral home. Our dining room, I guess, back then, in that old two-story white house with 12-foot ceilings in it. No air conditioning back then. And an old coal oil heater in the middle there of the
You're bringing back old
area.
Times, yeah.
Yes, sir. That was the parlor. And our kitchen was their kitchen because that was during the time when people stayed up around the clock and stayed at the funeral home sometimes for 3 days and nights back
then. Were they the ambulance service also back then?
Yes, up until after I graduated from high school, we had the ambulance service. There were two funeral homes there, Ooten Funeral Home, mm-hmm. Which was started by my granddaddy Stanifer's uncle.
So you had a hand in both of them,
to
a point as far as family.
I was related to the competitors. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I was. My great-grandmother Stanifer was a sister to the gentleman that started Ooten Funeral Home mm-hmm. in the 30s, and my great-granddaddy Stanifer had started Stanifer and Son in 1902. Mm-hmm. And my great-granddaddy actually started because he made caskets for people. He mm-hmm. was a partner in a general store business, and he mm-hmm. made caskets, and somebody said, well, G.A., why don't you go in and do something and try to help folks out and mm-hmm. do a funeral home, do the whole thing. So that's how he got started. But I can remember growing up, I would help after a funeral. When I was younger, I would help after the family left the funeral home and went to the church house because mm-hmm. funerals were never in the funeral home at that time. Everybody went to a church house or to the cemetery, one or the other. And I would help clean up, put chairs up and dust mop the old hardwood floors that we used to hand wax mm-hmm. and buff and pick up flower petals and things of that nature. And I would help when they would bring flowers when mm-hmm. there was a body there at the funeral home. Flower shops would bring them, and I'd get them and carry them in and help Daddy put them up. And he said one of the tales he tells on me is that after he would go on an ambulance call and come back, I would come out, and if there was no blood or anything exciting there, I'd go back in the house, and he'd have to change the cot by himself. And he'll tell that story today and laugh about it, but I guess I've always been that way. It's a little bit of a emergency services as a whole. I'm an old EMT, an old mm-hmm. volunteer firefighter, and law enforcement now for over 35 years, so.
I'm glad you mentioned the attitude about being in the funeral home because I have seen that here, of course, in my position, your position. We have been to an awful lot of funerals, more
yes.
than and a lot of them were, of course, dear friends. And it's always amazed me that you and I can have been around people long enough that we can see through them to tell whether they're genuine or not.
Yes, sir.
And I can honestly say that if you go to Woodfin's or Jennings and Ayers or Scales, funeral homes like that, I have never seen an individual look like they're just going through the motions. Those people actually care. They'll bend over backwards to care for you.
You're right.
And that's so important because there's nothing more important than honoring an individual's life. And we have done that so many times. And one of the ways that law enforcement does it is that we actually have funerals almost very similar to what they do in the military.
Yes.
But we actually use the musical instruments that actually go directly with the funeral. And we're talking about the trumpet, and we're talking about the bagpipes.
Right.
And you actually started early doing that when you were at the funeral home.
I did. I'm an old trumpet player. I actually played all the way through high school and then went to UT Chattanooga as a music education major. I was going to be a high school band director. And of course,
now that I can't see.
Well, I did a little bit of substitute teaching when a band director at home was out, and I decided very quickly that's not how I wanted to spend my life. But that was after 3 years there at UT as a marching mock, and we used to have some very big battles, basketball particularly, with Middle Tennessee State and Tennessee Tech. That's back when UTC had some really good basketball, and we were all pretty much
remember that.
Close. Oh, I do. I do. And I can remember one time at band camp, at Tennessee Tech, someone had stolen the Golden Eagle there from the middle of the campus. And I don't know who found it, but they actually found it, I understand, here on the campus in Murfreesboro.
Well, surely that was not.
That's what they told me.
Anyway. I think these tech guys planted it over here.
Well, they very well could have back then. You never know, you know. Some of those kids from the plateau, there's no telling what they might do. But then again, you had a lot of folks here in Murfreesboro at Middle Tennessee State from Dunlap, Tennessee, and Sequatchie County, too, coming over here going to school. A lot of the teachers, when I was in high school, had come to Middle Tennessee. And
Middle Tennessee seemed like it's always been the magnet for most of the kids in the Middle Tennessee area. Because it's great to have a school right in your backyard that is a real class school, and Middle Tennessee has been that for many, many years.
Yes, it has. It really has. And I've had a relationship with folks off and on here at Middle Tennessee for several years back. When I had driver's license years ago, Dr. Reuben Kyle, at School of Business here in Middle Tennessee, and Barbara Haskew, who's now on TVA board, both of them were here in the School of Business and came over and helped us work on some things trying to streamline that issuance process and so on and so forth. And it's still today a problem and takes forever to get through, but nothing's going to change until they spend money on facilities that will handle the number of people, and until they get the technology that will process it and maintain the information and handle things in an expeditious manner, because it's still a long, drawn-out manual process to get a driver's license.
Now, the driver's license, you still do the handgun permits right there. I mean, they still do them.
They actually do the document. The majority of the work goes on behind the scenes in a room with about 10 people in it total. It was moved over when I was colonel. It was moved over under the Highway Patrol and moved from driver's license, because we had an issue with driver's license personnel not being able to run criminal histories. So there were people who were being issued driver licenses who actually had criminal histories, and that was the reason. They also were not able to run criminal histories when it was time to renew one. So there were renewals being given to people who had been convicted during the time time period from the time it was issued until, and that information had not been reported to the department. So that was another thing we built in. Anytime someone renewed, we always ran the criminal histories first before we renewed those licenses. But
they would actually pick their application up there.
Yes, they pick them up at driver's license or print it online, one or the other, fill it out, and then they would start the process to get the document itself there in the driver's license station.
Now, we were talking earlier, and one of the first times that I saw you playing was that you were over here in Murfreesboro at the memorial.
Yes, sir.
At the law enforcement memorial. And you brought your trumpet.
Yes, sir.
And you had two young fellas with you.
Well, I had two young people with me. One of them was our oldest. Vicky and I have eight, actually, now. Mm-hmm. We have seven that are ours. Mm-hmm. Vicky had four. I had two when we married 13 years ago. And mm-hmm. then we had a surprise 10 years ago. And she keeps us hopping.
Oh, still. I'll bet.
But then we have another child that's 19, mm-hmm. Who came to us. He had nowhere to go, and his mother had said, "I didn't want you when the state made me take you back. You need to get your stuff, get out," when he turned 18, mm-hmm. Back in 2009. Mm-hmm. And he was not going to get to graduate from mm-hmm. Laverne High School, so we gave him a place to live, and he's mm-hmm. ours as far as we're concerned anyway, and he mm-hmm. is too. He mm-hmm. even introduces us as his parents. Mm-hmm. Even though he doesn't look like he came from either of us, he's at Tennessee Wesleyan now with Sonny, our 21-year-old, and Sky, our 19-year-old. They're mm-hmm. all three there. The girls play softball on scholarship, and Sonny plays volleyball as well. Mm-hmm. And then Dexter's there. He was given a grant from a foundation that they had at Tennessee Wesleyan because he was basically homeless and had no one. And he's actually getting to go to college, too, on a grant. Basically like a scholarship, only it's a grant because of his situation mm-hmm. he had. So, you know, that worked out good for him and us, too. You know, that's what the good Lord tells us to do, is take care of each other. And that's one of the things we've always done. We've always had kids in our home.
Well, tell me how you played taps that first time I saw you.
We did a dual echo. My son Christopher, who's 25 now, is a trumpet player, and our oldest Summer, who is 30, she's also a trumpet player, mm-hmm. and we had practiced together, and this was at least 10 years ago. I'm sure it was before I came back to Middle Tennessee
area. Yeah, that's about right, yeah.
And Commissioner Jones had come to our memorial service at
Bill Howard Jones. Patrol.
Bill Jones. Former Colonel Bill Jones. He was yeah. actually captain when I went through THP recruit school.
He was the first Teflon man. He's the only man that I've ever seen in that position at that high level with a highway patrol. It didn't matter which party came in, he just kept on rising.
He always got promoted. He did. But he had asked me after our memorial service there mm-hmm. in Nashville, he said, "I know it's asking a lot, but could you stop on your way back to Dunlap and play for us at our memorial? We can't mm-hmm. find anybody to play for us."
Right.
And I said, "Let me talk to the kids." So I went to the kids, and I said, "Okay, you got to go back to school if we get home too early. Mm-hmm. If you'll stop and play with me, I'll buy you lunch." And they said, "Where?" And I said, "I don't know, maybe Logan's." So they both, their eyes lit up because mm-hmm. naturally there's not a Logan's in Dunlap. Mm-hmm. And so we came and ate a bite and spent some time and just relaxed and cooled off a little bit. And then we came on over here for the memorial service. But I got to see people I knew. Melvin Cunningham, who's a sergeant yep. with MPD, was my roommate at Tennessee Law Enforcement Training Academy back in 77 when I worked for Signal Mountain Police Department. Mm-hmm. And then Glenn Chrisman was a classmate with us mm-hmm. in that same class. So I've known Glenn and...
And you still were able to succeed anyway.
In spite of him.
Yeah, right.
In spite of him.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me what the sound is when you're doing that, because when you're able to make or initiate a sound that is a little bit different, but it actually almost stirs the emotions of how you do it.
And it depends on how you play it. The trumpet's like any other musical instrument, whether it's a piano, a keyboard, or percussion or whatever. One of the things I learned a long time ago is when you play, you should always play with emotion. Mm-hmm. And depending upon the song and the purpose, you have to almost sing through that musical instrument, or like you're singing. Mm-hmm. And if you have someone who sings a song, just simply sings the words and the music, then it doesn't really impress you a lot of times. Even though it may be pretty, it may sound good, they may have a beautiful voice, it still doesn't impress you. But you have to play taps the way it was written and meant to be played.
Most emotional tune there is, it as is. Far as I'm concerned.
It really is. And you have to actually play it with the emotion you're supposed to. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things, I can say it here now because I don't have to be politically correct, I don't think, at this point in time. But
hooray for that.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that I've always done, I've always closed my eyes and asked God's help anytime I played.
Yeah,
it's very emotional. There have been a few times that immediately after playing, I broke down in tears or had tears running down my cheek when I played because I knew the people.
Right.
And I played for literally hundreds of military and emergency services funerals in my life. I played all the way from Alcoa to Southwest Tennessee, from Northwest Tennessee to Southeast, all over the state of Tennessee, literally, for memorial services and then funerals as well. And I always tried to play with the emotion of the event, the emotion that I felt like was needed to truly honor the person for whom that song is played. Mm-hmm. And it indicates the last call, for the most part.
Right.
Whether it's military or law enforcement or just for a memorial service, it simulates that last call to honor and give respect to those who have served us, whether military or as a civilian in the emergency services professions. And I say it that way because that includes fire, police, rescue, EMS, etc. And I've played for all the above.
Those are services that require a lot of energy, a lot of service as far as how the person is looking at his or her particular job. Those are jobs that are very difficult. Most of them are low-paid jobs, but they're jobs that they really feel called to do. And those are the type of professions that really make our community strong and safe. And there's three different things that get me during a law enforcement officer's funeral, and that's mostly what I have dealt with,
right,
are those at all kinds of levels, from very young to the older people. One is what you mentioned as far as taps. Taps will bring a tear to my eye every time I hear it, because I know exactly what it means.
Right.
And it's just that eerie sound that you hear. It's almost supernatural. And then the other one, of course, would be the bagpipes, because it is always signified the life of a law enforcement officer that has meant so much to his or her community.
Right.
And that will do the same thing. But the one that really gets me, and I know you guys do the same thing, is you always take the funeral procession around to where that individual's workstation was.
Right.
And as you pass, then we always had officers who wanted to be out there. They would salute the hearse as it went by, and then the dispatcher, it's hard for me to even say it, the dispatcher will call out that officer's number,
right,
and say, officer so-and-so is now 10-7, and
right,
that just gets me.
And to us, that means out of service.
Yes. And it's so, we didn't do that many years ago. And then as we started to learn more and more on how we could honor the officers, it really has made a major impact on me and all the law enforcement officers that take part in that. It gives a new meaning to what they actually do for the community. And I think that's something that we should always continue to do. And even, I mean, you were in the funeral business as a youngster.
Right.
And didn't it always make you feel proud when people would pull over on the side of the road?
Yes.
And some would get out of their cars and put their hands to their heart, or, or do the things to honor the individual, no matter who it is. I mean, that's something special. Now, I don't know if this is all across the country or just in the South or whatever, but I used to get letters upon letters from people who had had someone that had died, or maybe somebody just passing through, and they would send a letter and say, "We really appreciate the way that you honor a person's life there."
Yes.
And that's amazing.
And one of the things, you know, that really hit us was in Chattanooga with a huge lawsuit against Chattanooga Police Department when they were doing a funeral escort.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all got slammed with that from a law enforcement perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But and it kind of slowed down, but in many places now we still do the funeral escorts, even though the law doesn't require you to pull to the shoulder anymore as it mm-hmm. used to. Many people still do, even today. You still see in the Southeast that respect that people pay to those who have given their lives to serve others, and just any John or Jane citizen, too, who works in any other kind of job. If they see a funeral procession, they'll pull over. And that's the way I was raised. That's the way we really should be.
I know we had a meeting years ago on whether law enforcement was going to continue,
right.
And you've probably heard about it, escorting the funerals. And I was asked at point blank what I thought about it, and I said, I think that that's something that should continue forever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you can't honor each individual's life, then there's something wrong with what's going on in your particular community.
You're exactly right.
And want to let you know that part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. And they're at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And if you'd like to get a hold of them by phone, it's 713-4639. Or you could check them out at the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And that's Melissa Warren's business. And I think people know by now that that's a number that you can call if you're having particular problems at home where you can't take care of your normal duties, whether you've gotten older or maybe having some health problems. And Melissa will come in and she will do a work with you where you can decide on some of the things that you have to have done, and she can decide if you really need their services or not. And I can tell you, if you want to maintain a quality life, and most people want to do it at home, that is a great service that she's offering. And let me give you the number again. It's 713-4639.
Additional products and services will be offered for sale.
Working harder but not getting ahead? The rich get richer no matter which way the economy is headed, because today's times are filled with opportunity if you understand the new rules of money. You need to attend a free Rich Dad Education Workshop at the Embassy Suites in Murfreesboro and the Factory at Franklin. Based on the teachings from the best-selling book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, this totally free 90-minute event will show you how to survive and build security during these hard economic times. We teach why your house is not an asset, why you may not want to diversify, why you may not want to invest in 401ks or mutual funds, why saving money will never make you rich. These are just some of Rich Dad's teachings that will change the way you think about money. Attend this free Rich Dad education training next Wednesday and Thursday. Sign up now at richdadradio.com. That's richdadradio.com, or call 800-841-1993. That's 800-841-1993. Register now and get a free gift just for attending. Call 800-841-1993 today.
Self-storage has never been so convenient. Thanks to Zippy Shell, providing self-storage and moving solutions right to your front door. We deliver, you pack it, we pick it up and store it. Our units are secure, convenient, and best of all, they're just as affordable as traditional ones. Zippy Shell. Call us today for a free estimate.
Call locally owned Zippy Shell today. 216-7879. That's 216-7879.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank. Give the gift of life today at the Red Cross. A community blood drive going on from 9 until 6 o'clock this evening. The new Red Cross office is at 501 Memorial Boulevard. They're also taking apheresis blood donations from 9 to 4:45 today. Give the gift of life today at the Red Cross here in Murfreesboro. The world-famous Chuck Wagon Gang in concert tonight at 7 at Burt Baptist Church. That's at 1087 Burt Road in Woodbury, 7 o'clock tonight. And also at 7 o'clock tonight, the praise band Ignite in concert over at the Mount Hermon Baptist Church, 7 o'clock tonight. A free recital at 8 o'clock tonight at MTSU's Wright Music Building, Deanna Little on flute, and pianist Wendell Little. That's free at 8 o'clock tonight at MTSU's Wright Music Hall. And the Farmer's Market is in the morning, 6 to 11 over at the Lane Agri Park. That's on John Rice Boulevard, just down from Sam's, and next to Paws. And at 10 in the morning, the Murfreesboro Fire Department offers a community tribute to 9/11. That's 10 o'clock in the morning on the Murfreesboro Square. And another 9/11 commemoration on Sunday from 1 until 5 at the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office on the New Salem Highway. And at that event, a special sculpture, including one of the beams from the Twin Towers, will be dedicated. That's this Sunday from 1 to 5 at the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. Cole Porter's Anything Goes this weekend at the Murfreesboro Center for the Arts. Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank.
Weather Eye.
Partly to mostly cloudy this afternoon, high in the low 70s. Tonight, mainly cloudy, slight chance of showers, low 56. Cloudy early Friday with a slight chance of rain. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now it's 66.
It's been a busy week and it's finally winding down. Too tired to cook supper? Stop by Kirk and Burt's and pick up our family pack to go. A pound of barbecue, buns, and your choice of side, all for just $9.99. Kirk and Burt's, 517 Kaysen Lane, just down from the theater.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS, AM and FM.
Today's guest, Laverne Police Chief Mike Walker.
Sausage and biscuits, gravy and grits, home ground, homemade, it'll get you fits. Blueberry pancakes and corn cakes too, I'm a-licking my lips, now how about you?
And you're listening to John Blankenship and Friends, and we're talking about Avant Lane, Ken and Sarah Frazelle, and Billy Yearwood, and nobody better than Mr. Mike Walker over here just said, what did you just say when you heard him?
I said, it sounds good to me.
Oh, yeah. I tell you what, it's a great band, and they're out.
I was talking about the food.
Oh, the food.
Well, the band's good, too.
Yeah, the food is. Have you been there yet?
No,
oh, it's out of this world. Take a trip out at the Reval Mill. It'll be 100 years old next year. I mean, 200 years old next year. I'm sorry. And it was refurbished by Tom Brady. And it's one of the few working mills left in the United States. And it's absolutely gorgeous out there. They have the river running around it. And when you go back, you can go back in time, go inside the mill and see how progress was made back in a couple of hundred years ago to help the people out and raise their quality of life. But it's just the fact that you can go out there and be among a lot of people just like you that just want to enjoy the atmosphere. And they treat you so nice. And I recommend everybody within listening range, take a ride out John Bragg Highway if you're leaving from Murfreesboro and go about 10-15 minute drive, and you'll see the sign, turn left, and it's about 2 more miles, and pull in where the mill is, and you will never regret taking the trip. And I can, you know, that's something that you and I would have loved, you know, when we were first starting patrol.
You better believe it.
Do you remember those good old days?
I remember them very well. I can remember when I started in Marion County with a patrol on midnight shift.
Mm-hmm.
In 1977, there were two places to get a cup of coffee on the midnight shift, and those were both truck stops on Mont Eagle.
Wow.
Nothing else was open. We didn't have convenience stores or things they have out here today.
What was the name of that restaurant in Mont Eagle that everybody wanted to go to? I mean, they used to leave from here to go over there.
The Smokehouse was up there, down towards Suwannee, and then there was one right there in the middle of the town, and I can't remember the name of it. It was there in front of a motel, and it had the big windows there on US 41, and it had been there back when it was US 41 before the interstate was built.
Well, I think Al Capone is supposed to have stopped there a few times going through. You didn't stop and have conversation with him.
No, I'm not that old. You're older than I am.
Yeah. But actually, I think I'm not even that old.
No, you're not.
But law enforcement was so great back then because it was pretty much in its early stages, and there was a lot of officer discretion back then, and very little backup, if any backup, if you grew up in a rural area. And this was a rural area at that time. I think most of the time we would have maybe five officers on duty, and sometimes there would be only two of us. And we had a lot of beer joints and a lot of calls to cover 630, 40 square miles. And you had all those curves and hills to cover.
I did, in Marion County and Grundy County, too. And in Marion County at that time, there were normally two deputies on duty on midnight shift. There was one South Pittsburgh officer, and I think Kimball had a part-time at that time. Weekends was usually the only time they had anybody when I first started on the midnights. Jasper had one, and then Whitwell had a part-time at that time. And that was it for all of Marion County. And, I mean, we would run from one end of the county to the other. I actually ran an awful lot of calls with the deputies, anything from domestics to murders to burglaries to anything you can think of, because that's all, you know, we all worked together back then.
And very little or, if any, formal training, because I remember when I first started, I learned what I needed to be doing by sitting in Judge Buckner's courtroom and watching him.
That's true.
But the rest of it was common sense. And a lot of people don't realize that that is the major talent that an officer needs, is common sense. And then the next thing is he needs to be a people person. He needs to like individuals and can relate with them. To the point where they feel comfortable with that individual.
You're exactly right. That's one of the things in Laverne. Of course, the city hasn't kept up with the progress over the last decade. And when the population was about 18,000 10 years ago, there were about 45, 46 officers. The 1st of July, there were 45, 46 officers. And then this fiscal year, the mayor and alderman had added in four additional police positions. And we're in the process right now of going through and doing the testing, and we've already done the application process, and into the system we're beginning to do the testing and background checks and so on and so forth. And hopefully we'll have those four new officers, and then they have four or five built in each year for the next 4 years after this one. So eventually, Laverne will hopefully catch up to where we need to be with the number of sworn officers and support staff, too.
I think I've always felt like that Laverne was understaffed for the population and all the industry that they have there. I'm probably asking you something you may not know, but what is the square mile of Laverne, your actual territory?
Land area is about 25 square miles, and there are about 178 miles of streets and highways.
That's pretty large. Now, right now, how many persons, do you have zones?
We do have zones. There are four zones in the city, and every now and then we have to drop back to three, depending on how many people are off sick or off injured or on vacation time and so on and so forth. But for the most part, we have the four zones that are covered regularly. If not, we back to three zones and handle it that way. But you've usually got one supervisor and four officers is usually what you have for a regular shift. Now, we have 2 hours overlap after each shift because they work 4 10-hour shifts.
That's good.
Week.
I like that.
And we have that 2-hour overlap built in there to where we've got the new group coming in and they get briefed and they go out and the other group comes in and they try to get their reports done, although you can't do all the paperwork that's required in today's world in an hour's time.
But in a way, you're almost creating a semblance of a power shift, too, because
that's true.
There are times where you're going to be more busy than others.
And that's correct.
I can remember back when we first started creating those, a lot of it would have to do with some of the beer joints and some of the amusement places closing at night and those type things where you knew that you were going to have trouble at some point and you needed to have enough personnel to take care of it. It's funny that when you have the shortage of personnel like we've all had all of these years, you're always having to manipulate people to make sure, or the numbers to make sure that you're able to cover everything in a manner where it's still going to be a safe situation, not only for the public, but also for the officers. And you have
That's
to take
true.
Their safety into consideration, too.
You're exactly right. And when you're out there by yourself with absolutely no help, of course, then we had no communications either.
Mm-hmm.
I had to call my dispatcher, who had to get on the phone and call the dispatcher at Marion County, and mm-hmm. they'd have to relay the information to their cars. And then we kind of got smart. We kind of did things we probably weren't supposed to do at that time, but we would buy scanners. We'd buy them ourselves, the old scanners with
Remember
the old
that.
Crystals
mm-hmm.
you'd have to plug into mm-hmm. them for the frequencies. I would go over to one of our car-to-car channels and key up and talk.
Mm-hmm.
The Marion County deputy had a scanner in his car. He would hear me on my frequency, and he'd talk back on his car-to-car, and I would hear him on the scanner
mm-hmm.
in my car. So we cross-banded, as we called it then,
mm-hmm.
in order to talk to each other. But
yeah.
that's what we had to do to communicate. And
yeah.
now we've got radios, for the most part, in many areas where we can directly talk to each other.
But even in today's time, law enforcement still has a problem with communication because there's always dead spots. I mean, we had it constantly here, and we utilized the Highway Patrol Tower back when I was there many times to help take care. We put repeaters up there that would
right.
Take care of the rough spots. But that's part of the communication, and that's part of the Homeland Security strategy, from what I can remember, is to be able to eliminate the loss of communication in certain areas. And I know a lot of money was supposed to be funded, and I presume that it's going to go into that position where law enforcement officers across the state of Tennessee will no longer have that hindrance. And I can tell you, when we're talking about public safety, if it's going to cost money, that's one place that money ought to go to. And I'm talking about public safety and education. If you can't have it there, then we're lost.
You're right. And I agree that, if you'll remember, one of the things that I had started working on a few years ago was a new communication system for the patrol. And mm-hmm. Colonel Tracy Trott, who's also a mm-hmm. resident of
right.
Rutherford County,
mm-hmm.
Has continued forward with it, and they're actually getting to the point now that they're almost ready to start building out a part of that system that we've worked on for the last 4 years to secure funding and to have in place. It wasn't the robust system we wanted, where local agencies could actually tap directly into it and utilize that as an infrastructure for their own communications in addition mm-hmm. to ours. But at least it will be spread out throughout the state and will give us connectivity from one end of the state to the other,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's on a shared mutual aid channel like we've used for a number of years, or whether it will actually be a direct talk trunked
mm-hmm.
700, 800 megahertz mm-hmm. system. But it's coming. It's actually on its way now, and there's more funding that needs to be given to it, and hopefully that will continue because you know, in law enforcement agencies, the first two things that are cut normally are training and the equipment or technology
right.
you
right.
need. I mean, I can remember years ago we were using light bars that were breaking down, and you always had mileage go up on your patrol car to some agencies over 200,000, 300,000 mm-hmm. miles on a patrol vehicle because those were two of the first things. Reduce training cost and reduce equipment cost
mm-hmm.
in order to have people to still ride on the roads. But when you do that, you get what you pay for, too, because
mm-hmm.
law enforcement is a profession. We have to continually train, and that's mm-hmm. one of the things that I promised our folks that I will fight for them is equipment and technology and the funds to do training and stay abreast of all of the changes that are taking place. And the biggest thing is for officer safety.
Well, as you know, equipment is one of the biggest safety factors that we have in law enforcement.
Yes.
And I remember when we first started patrolling, we did not have screens at all. People were right behind us with no protection, sitting right behind you. And if you were not able to secure them properly, you could be in a world of hurt. And unfortunately, a lot of officers who were familiar with the people that they were arresting trusted them a little bit too much. And that ended up a lot of time in putting the officer in harm's way. And, and of course, we're talking about before training and all the other stuff. But somehow we survived. I don't know how we did it. But and what is the biggest obstacle? I know that you're going to have a major change because you're in charge of officers across the state in a lot of different programs, as we well know. And here you're going into a small to mid-sized city, and you're going to have to go in and put all your efforts into there and make those changes. What are the number one things that you're looking into as far as making Laverne a class A law enforcement agency?
Perception, the public's perception. I've learned I've been there that the public didn't think very highly of the folks who were there, and that's. In my opinion, as a resident and taxpayer of the city of Laverne for the last 8 years, I think much of that was incorrect, personally, that it was mistargeted, so to speak. There are some really good, sharp folks there who are very capable, who do things the right way, and do an excellent job for the citizens of Laverne and those who visit Laverne. Part of the problem has been... not having sufficient numbers of people to do what they need to the way they should do it. And as a result, because of the influx of various problem folks moving across lines and moving into and so on and so forth, you've had problems with gangs and criminals coming from other areas to get away from maybe heat from somewhere else because, as you well know, one of the things we learned over the last few years, if you do something here in Murfreesboro and put the heat on a group, they're going to go somewhere else, and usually it's not going to be too far. It'll be pretty close to an adjoining neighborhood somewhere.
You just like you got another state bordering you.
You're right. You're right.
Because you get a large influx over there that has an impact on
yes,
the city
does.
and the school system, everything else.
Yes, it does. And I've learned that public's perception, and that's one of the things that I set out to do, was to make sure that our folks understand, you know, in order to be professional or be viewed as professionals, we have to, number one, look professional, we have to act professional, and we have to actually be professional and do that training and that improvement, that enhancement of technology, etc., so that we indicate we're professionals and the public can actually see it then. And that's one of the things that we worked on from the get-go. And I'm probably cheerleading as much as anything right now because the folks there were kind of beaten down a little bit because of the public constantly saying everybody there was bad. And they really aren't. There's some really good folks there. In any group, I said this with the Highway Patrol back in 2006, when I became colonel, in any group, you've got a handful of folks who are not going to be worth killing, so to speak, not literally, but figuratively. You've got a handful of folks, whether it's a civic group, another profession of any kind, a church group, or any other group, you've got some folks that are not necessarily there for the right reason.
Right.
And it's usually about 4 or 5% generally in almost every group. And that's pretty much what you've gotten in Laverne. You know, that's one of the things when I first went to work for Laverne in March of this year, the 9th of March, I went there as a public works director. Mm-hmm. And I found that there were a lot of good folks there who had a lot of capabilities. Mm-hmm. And their biggest problem was not having the tools with which to do their jobs and the training. So I began with the training there, beginning to require everybody down the road eventually. If they're in water distribution, to be water distribution trained and certified. Mm-hmm. And build on that training and that level of training and the credentials or certifications at a higher level as they grow and learn more. And folks have really picked up and really started asking for training, and I want to go to this and I want to go to that. And that's in public works. And I'm seeing the same thing begin now with police. The problem I've had is that for the last month, or at least since the 3rd of August, not only was I chief of the police department, but I was still the interim director of public works.
So
I've got those two agencies still going. I had it on the way over here. I had a water main break.
Uh-oh.
That I got a phone call about coming over here. Mm-hmm. But next week, we have a new public works director coming on board. He actually lives here in Murfreesboro. His name is Greg Skinner. He's mm-hmm. a very sharp young man. To me, he's a young man. Mm-hmm. Very sharp young man with good education. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll bring additional perspective to that position. And we'll continue to move forward even hopefully more quickly than I was able to do while I was there. Just wish him the best of luck and my prayers, because I was there from March the 9th to the 17th of April, had another heart attack and had to have bypass surgery. So hopefully Greg's young enough and he won't have those issues in his first 6 weeks
or so.
See,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I did. That was my second one. You know, I had my first one back in 99, had 4 bypasses.
And you look 30 years younger than what you are.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm all of 15, right?
I can tell you right now, and you know this as well as I do, a law enforcement, a lot of time, people, their perception of it is, you know, what they see on the side of the street and, you know, how they're acting, even at a funeral or whatever. They always watch a law enforcement officer to see what type of department he's with.
Right.
But the number one person they look at is the chief.
That's true.
And the officers will build off of you, which is, I think, is one of the greatest things that could happen to Laverne, having you in there, because your rapport with people is so great, and you always keep yourself in an honorable way. You always are striving to do the right thing and to upgrade whatever area you are and make it better. And you truly do like the community that you live in. You love the people there. And I think that's something that Laverne has really been needing for a long time. And I am tickled to death that they're finally going to get up there to that area of professionalism where they should have been for a long, long time. And I'm just so pleased with you.
I appreciate that a bunch. We've been friends for a long time, and you're right, I do have a lot of friends here, and I do love the area. Vicky and I moved our family here, and most of our children have been raised there in Rutherford County Schools in Laverne, and we've got 3 of our very own, and then Dexter too, mm-hmm. our foster son or mm-hmm. whatever we want to call him. He's our extra son, I guess. But we've had 4 graduate from Laverne High School, and Michaela now is in the 5th grade at Rock Springs Elementary, and we do love it. We've been involved there in the community with baseball and softball during the summer and in the school sports and activities at the schools, and now we were able to finally settle and find a church home that we really felt comfortable with. We hadn't found that.
You hadn't found it yet?
In a while, we did. And that's at Miracle Baptist Church there. I'll have to put that plug in there for
the Baptist folks. But for some reason, I was kind of thinking you might say Buddy Royston. Do you know Buddy?
No, I don't.
He worked for me for a long time. He has the Methodist Church there in downtown Laverne. And he just absolutely loves it. He loves the people there. And it's just been a whole new world for him. But if you get a chance, go by and talk to Buddy.
I will.
He's the one that helped me start the school resource officer program in Murfreesboro. So,
well, I may have to talk to him pretty soon because we need a chaplain's program in the worst kind of way.
Oh, he would be as good as you could get, and he knows law enforcement. I want to let you know that part of this show, and looked like it was the last part of this show, was brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive. And they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shevable, Tennessee area. For a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And the caveat, of course, is for the life of the car, you have oil changes and tires free of charge.
Hi, I'm Dr. Patrick Showalter.
And I'm Dr. Chad Jackson. Did you know that Middle Tennessee Medical Center is home to the Da Vinci Surgical Robot and that we are the first surgeons to use the robot in Rutherford County?
When faced with prostate cancer, the Da Vinci Robot makes surgery an excellent option.
It allows for quicker recovery, less blood loss, and studies suggest it may be the most effective, least invasive treatment option for improving cancer outcomes.
For more information or to find a Da Vinci Robot certified physician, visit mtmc.org.
Hello, this is Doris Ann with the Rutherford County Farm Bureau. We would like to show our appreciation to all of our Farm Bureau members by inviting you to our annual meeting on Monday, September the 12th at the Lane Agri-Park Center, 315 John R. Rice Boulevard. We will be serving barbecue with all the trimmings from 5 p.m. till 6:15 p.m. with the meeting starting at 6:30. For more information, call 893-1213 or visit our website at rcfarmbureau.org.
This is your Good Neighbor Network, WGNS Murfreesboro, WETVLP Murfreesboro, W263AI Murfreesboro, and W270AF Murfreesboro. The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
Welcome back with us. Mike and I were talking to Brian Barrett, and bless his heart, he's got to go to school tonight to learn how to do math in the third grade. And it seems like you're starting all over, Brian.
Well, that's why I'm in radio, so I don't have to do math. So,
yeah, but you're going to have to take your shoes off too, Brian, because now you're going to have to do multiplication, so you got to have fingers and toes.
I need more, yeah. It kind of made me think of that show that Jeff Foxworthy does, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Yeah. I have watched that show, and I am not smarter than a fifth grader.
Well, I don't know that I'm smarter than a third grader either, so that's part of my problem.
And is your child going to go too?
No, it's just kind of an education for parents to see what they're teaching the kids, and you really got to reinforce that stuff at home nowadays.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, and if you don't know how to help them, then they get so far behind. It goes so quick.
I am so proud of you, because that's one thing we were talking about the other day, is the lack of attention as far as the parents are when it comes to their child's education. It seems like that,
well, isn't that
they leave it all, up on the child to learn, yeah. and then they go on to other areas. So,
well, it's our responsibility to teach our kids.
It is.
So. Yeah, but so many people, that's one of the reasons law enforcement has some of the issues we have today, Truman, as you well know, is we have, just like they expect teachers to raise their children, they expect law enforcement when they're not at school and at home, they expect law enforcement to raise them and keep them out of trouble. And the discipline, really, and the education and the training up of a child in the way they should go, mm-hmm. according to Proverbs, is us.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian, you're so right.
He's taking off running somewhere.
He is.
And, you know, I'm so glad he closed that door a minute ago, because we're listening. I guess it was a recording session over there next to us.
Oh, really?
And I got where I couldn't concentrate, which is normal for me, but it becoming a little bit more abnormally bad.
That's true.
Now, you were talking about some of the things that you were changing and doing. I know that the economic problem is hitting everywhere right now. And I know it's hit extremely hard in Laverne, because you haven't had a tax hike in many, many, many years.
Right.
Do you think that that we're looking at a positive conclusion on that, as far as the city leaders trying to deal with all the specific needs for Laverne, and yet they're still getting, as it is normally everywhere, when people start hearing taxes, they start revolting?
They do, as chief of police, I can't address that other than the funding that I know I need or that Public Works
right.
needs, because I don't play politics with work. As a resident, I know that my taxes are going up. One of the problems we've got is the tax assessment was done for the county last year, and the value of my property was said to go up, to have gone up, where at the same time, a house two doors up from me there in Woodland Hills subdivision in Laverne listed about 4 years ago for, I think it was $178,000. It's listed today as $139,000. And the lady that was there had done a lot of work on it, and you know, it should be appraised at more as far as selling price is concerned, but the selling prices are down tremendously while the assessed property value has increased for the most part for many of us. I know the mayor and the alderman went through an awful lot when they were considering the fiscal state of the city. One of the things I know is we're doing a lot of repairs on water mains because of things that have been done in the past with the infrastructure not being improved upon, with sewer pump stations, with water distribution pumping stations. The water treatment plant has a capability of doubling what they're doing now, but we don't have the lines in the ground, the infrastructure to transport that amount of water. You know, over the next few years, a lot of work has to be done on water, sewer, streets, etc. There hasn't been a street actually paved. Pothole fixing is all, and not a lot of that in some instances, but not a street hasn't actually been paved since about 2005. I'm not, as a city employee, I'm not necessarily supporting the political aspect of it, but from a perspective of a city employee of the needs that are there, yeah, there's got to be revenue from somewhere. And I think Laverne maybe dropped the ball many years ago, maybe even back in 72 when they incorporated again, by moving toward a lot of industrial business versus some commercial. You know, that's one of the things that the town of Smyrna did do. Smyrna appears to be doing fairly well right now, holding their own anyway, I'll put it that way, because of the retail they have. Laverne doesn't have that retail. It's difficult to buy a pair of shoes or anything else.
Yes, you're exactly right. Smyrna has been able to operate their government at the most efficient level because they've made so many great decisions. And one of the things I've seen in governments, you know, fairly locally, is that a lot of times politically they don't want to raise any taxes at all.
Right.
And we're talking about a small amount, a cent or 2 cents or whatever. And as they keep putting those off, then the major problems start to grow. The basic building areas are starting to erode, and you've seen it when schools are not taken care of, you don't have the roofs put on and in a timely manner, and those things like that. Your costs go directly up through the roof, and I think that's what a lot of cities are looking at, and including Laverne, is when you do that and you keep putting off your responsibilities, eventually it's going to bite you, and it's going to bite you hard. And I think that that's what they're seeing. And you've got so many of the things that have to be taken care of. I know we're going to have to leave right now because we have the Atlanta Braves that are coming on, and Brian is about to have a stroke over here. But
go Braves.
Yes, sir, go Braves. And finally go Braves. They've looked terrible the last two or three games. So let's root them on. And tomorrow I'll have Terry Beckman on, and she is one of the ladies that used to work with the school resource officer program here and is now working in investigations for Medicare fraud, and she's going to be an absolute delight. And thank you so much for being on, Mike, and thank you for being my friend, and thank you for what you're doing for Laverne. And I think that we're going to see the results of that pretty soon.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.